chaps with no pants on, that would be really...
No. Assless chaps are always bad. they're all assless, yes.
If they're not assless chaps, they're pants.
Yeah.
So you learned something new today, guys. Okay? Welcome to this episode, 1075 Chatter. I'm here with Art Ditzel. Art is a Tenafly fireman. He's a retired paramedic?
Retired.
He's still active, still working a little bit, I guess.
Here and there.
Yeah, you're doing some stuff. I know you picked up a new position recently, too, because you just can't keep yourself.
I can't stop. And I'm working my first shift there Sunday, so it's going to be interesting.
Okay. And then he's also an emergency management coordinator at a large hospital in New York City. So welcome. Glad to have you here. We'll get right into it. I guess emergency services, why? What drew you in? How old were you? Where were you?
So not giving away my age too badly, I watched Emergency as a little kid, and that's all I wanted to do. Johnny and Roy.
Me too.
And my grandfather was a volunteer fireman in Tenafly when I was a kid. And I lived in Englewood, and they had the career department. So I had to figure out how to become a volunteer. And thankfully, my family moved back to Tenafly, which made life a lot easier. And I got to ride around in some white fire trucks for a while. And couldn't figure out why everybody else had different color fire trucks.
You guys were white with like orange stripe, right?
Oh, when I joined, it was just white. We added the NFPA stripe later on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Pure white, huh?
Pure white trucks.
And that was, how old were you? You were 18?
I was 17? 18, yeah. 18, early 90s.
Yeah. Yep, that's...
The era of Harvey Eisner, yeah.
Yeah, I remember watching Emergency as a kid. I mean, between that and Chips were my two favorite TV shows, you know.
Yeah.
And now I watch them do commercials about, you know, selling properties and, you know, what's his name?
Eric Estrada. Yeah,
whatever he's selling. He's selling something, life insurance or properties or reverse mortgages. I don't know what he's selling. But, yeah, I remember I grew up on the same shows you did. I'm probably just a little bit older than you. I got you by a hair.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I got you by a hair. But, yeah, I remember, you know, it was always – and back then there weren't a lot of – everybody had red fire trucks.
Yes.
It wasn't like it is today where guys have green, they have blue, they have all these colors. It was – in my town, it was one side of town, we had two fire companies. It was red. The other side was that nasty NFPA yellow.
Ooh, the slime lime.
Yes. We had three of those. So, and all three of them were slightly different in color. So it was really, really an interesting time for us over there. But, yeah, for the most part, and everybody knew about Tenafly growing up. It's like because if you knew about the fire service, it was like, oh, those are the guys with the white fire trucks.
Yeah.
Now it's not so uncommon, but, you know.
And it was a weird reason why we switched. And I think it was during World War II. They couldn't get red paint. So they bought a truck and they painted it white.
And never went back. Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
And even repainted one of the antiques white.
Oh, so it was red and they...
Yeah, the 1920 LaFrance that's still in the firehouse was a red truck when it was delivered. And they painted it white in the 40s, I think.
Got to match the fleet.
Yeah. Right?
Well, it makes buying Chiefs cars that much easier, though. White Chiefs cars are a lot easier than red.
Yep.
Especially when you're trying to match, you know, this guy's red or, you know... Every fire apparatus manufacturer has like 70 shades of red, you know, depending
and
on
all just a little bit different.
Yeah, and they're like, oh well, this doesn't really match. We want to repaint our whole Chiefs car so it matches the command vehicle. And it's like, okay, we'll do whatever you want, but you know,
you're gonna pay for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's red. I mean, it's red. Just go with it. But yeah, victory red was is a big Chevy color, and that's kind of like what everybody sticks with when they need a red fire command vehicle. But white is a heck of a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
So you started there, 18 years old.
Started there, 18 years old. I started at Tenafly Ambulance at 17. Well, really 16, I guess. But they were the police department ran the ambulance there until the early 90s. And the police department started getting busier, as police departments do. And they said, hey, we're going to start a volunteer ambulance. And I really wanted to be a fireman. Couldn't do it till I was 18, and my godfather actually said to me, hey, I saw this article in the newspaper, Tenafly starting a volunteer ambulance. Why don't you do that and see if you like that, and then you can be a fireman. So I did that, and then I became a fireman, and here I am.
Yeah, because you could do EMS at 16 in the state of New Jersey. Yeah. So it gives you two years of, you know, which 16, you're saving lives at 16. That's crazy that there's kids out there doing that. But
oh, yeah, it was crazy they let us out on the ambulance. It was myself and another teenager and Nick, who used to paint the lines in Tenafly on the streets.
he was
the guy that
drove
us around. Yep, that was the crew during the day.
That's great. But you got the job done.
I got the job done, and it brought me here. I mean, I became a paramedic because of that, and I got the job where I'm working now because I was a paramedic and transitioned up into emergency management, and yeah, it worked out pretty well.
So yeah, a lot of guys do that. I mean, you always hear about guys, you know, start off as a volunteer either in the EMS, fire, whatever they're doing, and then all of a sudden, you know, their career guy's doing something in that field. It may not be exactly in that field. Some guys are, you know, they stick with the OSHA safety stuff, and you know, some guys go into the, you know, fire apparatus building. You hear about all these guys getting into all these different things, but it's always, the crux is always like where they started, right?
Yeah, started off as a volunteer.
And you still stay in touch with everybody down in Tenafly?
I'm a life member there now.
Okay.
Which is why I have the bad beard. It's my post-COVID non-clinical working beard.
So how's things? Like, I mean, I know in my department, we're not too far from Tenafly. We're struggling with manpower in volunteer service. I mean, I'm sure you guys have to be struggling a little bit too. It seems like everybody in this area is.
Yeah, we were hurting for a couple of years. I mean, we get trucks out the door. That's not a problem. We recently actually just picked up two guys out of our junior program, came full members, and we had two older gentlemen in their 40s. One guy was a fireman in another town, and another guy was never a fireman, and they just joined as well. So it's a little bit of fresh air and a little bit of relief, but
yeah, you just have to hope that you don't burn them out,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, yeah.
You know, call volume goes up, membership's down. Guys are running more calls than ever, you know, trying to do the best they can. We had
automatic alarm after automatic alarm after automatic alarm.
Yeah, CO alarm, CO alarm, CO yep. alarm, yeah. No, I get it. And, you know, it's there's got to be a solution to the problem. But, you know, I know Cresco by you, they're doing partial pay.
Yeah, paid days.
Paid days. And, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. We had I was at the graduation, the Fire Academy graduation 2 weeks ago.
All right.
For Bergen County, and I think there was a couple.
I think we had two guys that just
I think
came
so.
Out of fire.
We had four graduate fire one, and we had a guy similar to you. It's like never been in fire service, mid 40s, did fire one, loved it. Now he's in fire two.
Nice.
And I'm like, okay, now it'd be nice to see at the firehouse. He's like, well, I'm doing my fire two. I'm trying to get all that done. I'm like, we could use you on fire calls, you know. But you know, years ago they used to tell you, oh, wait 2 or 3 years, get the experience, and then go back. I think his concern is, you know, he's already in his mid 40s. He doesn't want to.
Yeah. I think I did. I did fire one in '93 because I came out in the fall of '92, and I did fire two probably in like '98 or '99. Probably '98. I'm thinking about it.
So I did fire one in '91, and then I did fire two in '96, '97. So
a couple of years.
Somewhere in that range. So, but I remember fire one back in the '90s. You know, you talk to these guys today, and I'm like. What?
They were burning pallets. There was
tires.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. climb up into this burn tower, and you're stuck against the wall. Your outside ear feels like it's melting off, and they got these fires chugging. Now it's all, you know, and you couldn't
propane.
See, right? We couldn't see.
Oh, no.
They throw that hay in, and then they would throw the tires on top just to get that real thick black smoke. And, you know, and then the instructors are sitting there. Without any air packs on.
Oh yeah, just chilling out.
Yeah, just ducking underneath the smoke. I'm like, this is crazy.
Yeah, fire one was in the tower, and then fire two, they had just opened the life safety complex.
Okay, I was just before life safety complex for fire two, so I was about a year and a half before that. It was under construction. It just broke ground, I think, when I was in fire two. So
I mean, it was you could see everything, but they couldn't get that thing cooking. It got hot in there.
Yeah, I've been back for some trainings there over the years. You know. We're literally right down the street, our firehouse. So we're lucky. Every once in a while, we'll get a training night there. And we did the that bedroom off to the left, and we did did a search in the movie theater room.
Okay,
that's. I mean, it was incredible how big that. You don't realize how big that room is
until you're in there,
and you're like, wow, this is huge. You know, ropes, and then you know, we did that only because the size of the houses we have in town. I mean, we have some houses that exceed 12,000 square feet. You know, which are. Size of small shopping centers and commercial
buildings.
We've
got a couple up on the hill that have movie theaters in them, so yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, it's part of being in Bergen County, right?
Yep.
You could have the little, you know, 50 by 100 house, a bunch of those, and then half a mile away you got these mansions on a couple acres. So it's definitely a dynamic that a lot of people aren't used to. And we're definitely not rural.
No, we're packed in here, that's for sure.
But we run a tanker in our town because we have no water on the one side of town. Zero.
It's a foreign concept to me.
Yeah, it's a, oh, yeah, zero water. It's really, you know. So it's
Yeah, I went to pump school, and they're like, oh, you got to learn how to draft. I'm like, why? I have a fire hydrant every 1,000 feet.
Oh, that would be so nice. No, we had a draft. We had seven certified drafting points in town that were maintained, and, you know, they were inspected and all this stuff. And then slowly over the time, the one guy we were drafting one night, he's like, hey, I got koi in that pond. We're like, you know, this is a fire pond. He's like, no, it's my pond. And I was like, no, it's the fire pond.
Fire pond.
And we sucked up, I guess, a bunch of his koi. He was very upset, sent a letter to the mayor. What are you going to
do? Yeah, I don't think the pump would treat them very nicely.
No. I don't think they came out the other end the same way. So, but, yeah, I mean, and people don't have any concept. I mean, we went to a fire alarm. I told this story before, but, you know, we go to a fire alarm, I don't know, post-COVID, 2021, like late, and we get there, and, you know, I was the captain on the engine. I get that was the first one walking up, and the lady goes, wow, it took you a long time to get here. I go, oh, I had to come from home. And she goes, oh, you guys are still working from home for COVID? I go, no, we're volunteers. We're at our houses until we get the alarm, and then we go to the firehouse, get our equipment, and come here. And she's like, what? And I said, yeah, we're volunteer fire department. She goes, oh, we just moved out to New York City. So she had no concept. Drove by the firehouse 100 times.
Oh, yeah.
But never even put two and two together. There's not cars there all the time. You know, just never thought about it.
No, that was a whole thing after COVID. People in 2020, 2021 moving out of the New York City and moving into the suburbs. My neighbor down the street sold his house, moved to Florida, and a family from New York City moved in. And they were like, it's quiet here. Yes, it's quiet here.
Yeah, it's a different dynamic, yeah. So, but people don't think about that, right? They don't think about not having paid fire, paid EMS service. They just assume they're coming out of the city. They've always had it.
Yeah.
You know, and that it's the norm usually, right? So, I know we're hurting in my town for EMS has been an issue, but I know they've got a lot of backup from the county's now running some ambulances.
Five or six now, I think.
It was four when they started. Yep. I think they've almost doubled the fleet now, and they're running strategically. But I heard they're running like crazy, too, trying to back up everybody.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
So, you know, no interest in coming back and getting involved in that, huh?
No. My days working on an ambulance are done, I hope.
So, well, let's go get into that a little bit. So, you transition, you become – what year did you become a paramedic?
So, I went to paramedic school at St. Vincent's in Manhattan in 1999.
Okay.
I went to St. Vincent's because there were not a lot of paramedic programs in New Jersey at the time. Bergen County hadn't started the one at the community college yet. I think the closest one was Union County. And I had a friend who had gone to Vinny's the year before who was a TNEC volunteer. He's like, oh, yeah, the program's great here. You should come here. So, all right, yeah, sure, no problem. And I never looked back across the river after that. I worked per diem here and there in New Jersey, but most of my time I spent working as a paramedic in New York City and had a blast doing it. But, yeah, no urge to step back onto an ambulance now.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a different time and a little bit different era now. But, you know, I talked to guys, and I had a couple of buddies that were New York City cops, too, and they're like, once I went over there, the food, they talk about the whole culture there. Like, I'm not a city guy. I don't go to the city a lot. You know, never did. I'll run in for plays. I'll run in for shows. I'll run in for certain events. But I was never, like, the kind of guy that would just run into the city for dinner because somebody had a great meal. It just wasn't my thing. But they're like, oh, you got to go to this place in the city. They got great pizza, or this place has great, you know, Italian food, Chinese food, whatever ethnic food you're looking for, they had a spot for you.
Yep.
And you know, you talk to guys from New York, they're like, oh, you got to go here. You don't know what you're missing.
Yeah, you got to go to this guy on the corner, 172nd and Broadway, and you know, don't order off the menu. Tell them you want this because half the stuff they make isn't on the menu.
Yeah. No, I know, and you know, it was funny because. You know, I spent some time in the city. I was Upper East Side over at Sloan. Yep. My wife was in there for a hot minute getting some treatment. And the DoorDash at noon, like if you walk outside that hospital, watch out for the bicyclists.
Oh, yeah. They're crazy.
They will run you down. So, and, you know, they're all coming in to drop off the food. They, you know, everybody's meeting them in the lobby. And I was like, wow, this is like. Never realized like what a lucrative business that DoorDash, Uber Eats and all those, you know.
Yep. And that blew up during COVID. Blew up during COVID because nobody was going out to the restaurants. They were all ordering off an app.
Yep. And you could get liquor off the app, too, in New York City. Which was like unheard of, right? Yeah. As long as it was sealed or there was a certain way to seal it. They were making cocktails. And
I saw Bud Light bottles with pieces of scotch tape across the top of them. That was the seal.
That was the seal? That's crazy. Yeah. Because, you know, in the people don't understand in the Northeast, like, you just can't go to a Walmart and buy beer and wine.
Yeah.
Like, we can't do it here. Can't do it in New York City either, right?
No, you can buy them in bodegas in New York City.
Okay. So
but only beer, not wine or liquor.
Okay. So it's a little different.
A little different, but not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you have to go to, you know, you got to go to a liquor store for liquor. You got to, you know, you want anything, it's the liquor store. Beer, wine, soda, you know, any of your hard liquors, they're all in the liquor store.
Yep.
But it's funny because you know, I got a house in the Carolinas, and you walk into the Walmart down there, and
it's all there.
It's all there. Well, no hard liquor, because you got to go to the ABC store down there, because they have the ABC store still down there, because we're still a little bit in the Bible Belt over there. So, you know, you have to go to the ABC store. So if you want, it's funny because if you want the mixed cocktails with the wine in them, you can buy those at the grocery store, the Walmart, whatever. But if you want the ones that have like the vodka and stuff in it, you have to go to the ABC store because they don't carry them.
Amazing.
So it's it's like you got to like plan out like where I'm going to buy. And then I was out, my son's in college in Ohio. I go out there, and I walked into Walmart, and anything and everything you could want is on the shelf. Hard like you know, it's just for me the concept is like I'm like wow, they really sell this stuff. It's just it's different.
Yeah, and it's so interesting living in the Northeast. It's we've got so much freedom about some things and so little about others. Like, can't buy beer in the grocery store. I'm buying my barbecue stuff. Why can't I pick up a six pack to go with it?
Yeah, you got to go to the liquor store, and a lot of those grocery stores were smart because what they put right next door, they put the liquor store.
The liquor store, yeah.
Right next door, and they branded it under a different name, but it was their liquor store.
Yep.
They were smart about it. I mean, I go to the ShopRite in Oakland, and the ShopRite Liquors is right out front. Yeah.
Yeah, I go to the ShopRite in New Milford, and the ShopRite Liquors is right on the other side of the traffic light.
Yeah, they good marketing on their part, right?
Yep.
Smart branding, but I know they're talking about changing some of the liquor laws here because I mean they're selling liquor like a liquor license is $1 million now.
Oh yeah, it's ridiculous
because you can only get so many per capita, and that's why I mean all these little towns don't have all these restaurants, or if they do have restaurants, they can't have bars in them.
BYOs, yeah.
Because there's just not enough liquor licenses to go around, and I know they've been trying to like slowly amend those, but
yeah, my wife and I went to a fancy Italian place a couple weeks ago for dinner. She had friends in from California, and we had to bring our own wine with us. And the girl who was in from California and her husband were like, "What? You have to do what?"
Never heard of that, right?
Yeah.
The only nice thing is you save a little bit of money because
this is true,
but it also hurts the restaurants because that's where they make their money. They make their money on the liquor. Booze, so, yeah. But. I digressed a little bit, so let's get back to...
We went kind of that way.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll bring it back around to New York City, paramedic. Ooh,
so New York City paramedics, I worked a majority of my time in New York City in Washington Heights and Harlem. If you're not from this area and you don't know much about Washington Heights and Harlem, it's northern Manhattan. It's an underserved community. There's not a lot of healthcare options up there. There's a couple of big hospitals, a couple of city hospitals. But it's not like the Upper East Side where all the specialty hospitals and all that are. So a lot of people depend on EMS up there as their primary care. So it was great for me because I got to do a lot of medicine. Great for me, not so great for them. But you learn a lot doing primary care medicine because people aren't going to the doctors until, you know, they really, really need to. And then they're calling 911.
Yeah, and a lot of them don't have cars. They don't have ways to get around. So the ambulance is their taxi to get to the hospital.
Yeah, and you know they're getting to the point where they're not calling for a taxi. They're calling because they're on the door and they need to go.
Yeah, they're struggling. Yeah. And most of those people, a lot of those people were stubborn people, especially the older people during that era.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to the hospital. I'm fine.
No, there are a lot of immigrants in that neighborhood. A lot of folks would get on a plane from wherever they were, you know, their family lived, and fly into JFK or whatever with their medical records. And we'd walk in the house and they'd hand us a folder. And 9 out of 10 times, it was a language I can't read. So you skim it through, you look for words like cardiac or whatever, try to figure out what's going on if they're a poor historian. And all right, so this is what we need to do for you and get you to the hospital.
And language barrier, I'm sure, too, right? So sometimes communicating with people, trying to even figure out what's wrong with
them. Yeah, you learn a bunch of words for pain, you learn a bunch of words for breathe deep, and you kind of muddle through.
Crazy. So you did that. How long were you doing that for?
I was on the road in New York City as a medic for 14 years.
Ooh, nice little stint.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got the broken knees and neck and all that stuff to pay for it, so.
Yeah. A lot of stair chairs, right?
A lot of stair chairs.
Yeah, New York's famous for the stair chair. Yep. And prior to was the stair chair?
No, we didn't have the fancy ones with the rails on them.
Yeah, it was the original one where they just kind of bump, and you had to try to lift it from the front, right?
Yep.
I remember those days, and then they got the fancy one that's like almost gets itself up and down. It's almost like robotic, right?
Yeah, it's got the tray. It's like I describe it like the old refrigerator dollies.
Yep. Yeah. It's great. Now it's a lot easier to get patients in and out, especially, you know, nobody thinks about when they're building a building, you know, that you can't get a stretcher, a stair chair.
It's five stories. We don't need an elevator. Yes, you do.
Exactly.
And it's always fun when you're working, you know, nobody's the same height as their partner. Well, I worked with a guy who, he's been on the job literally a year and 9 days longer than I've been alive. And we did that math probably the first week I was working with him. And he's maybe 5'6", and I'm just a little over 6 foot. So that disparity when you're carrying the stair chair, it's like, you know, you got to tip higher, I got to tip lower. And
yeah, both of your backs are getting wrenched, yeah. No.
Carrying the oxygen, carrying the drug bag, carrying the monitor, carrying the patient.
Now everything hooks right under the stair chair.
Yeah, yeah, and you just, two hands, push it down the stairs.
Oh, it's good. I mean, it's good.
It's going to extend a lot of careers, not mine, but it's going to extend a lot of careers.
Well, and that's what you hear. You hear about the EMS. You hear the worst thing you hear is that, oh, I got a bad back and bad knees, and nobody ever thinks about it.
But
now with the stretchers, I mean, they're so modernized. They're so much easier to operate. You're not doing all that heavy lifting.
I recently switched doctors for my neck. I had a couple of bulging discs, and they said to me, "Can you pinpoint the injury?" I said, "I don't know, doc. I treated my body like a carnival ride for 22 years."
And he probably looked at you like, what do you mean?
Yeah. And he's like, oh, you know, I worked on an ambulance for 22 years. First aid as an EMT and the last as a paramedic. He's, oh, and this is your first time here? Yeah.
So you transition from there. So now you're working at hospital-based paramedics?
Hospital-based paramedics and FDNY-based paramedics.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you have FDNY-based. So.
Yeah, so the system there, probably a 60-40 split between hospital-based and FDNY. FDNY handling the lion's share. They handle all the dispatch and all that. So if you call 911, you're getting the closest unit based on GPS. Doesn't matter if it's an FDNY or a hospital-based unit.
Okay. Oh, so they're all GPS together?
Yeah, they're all GPS together. It's all the same dispatch system.
Yeah, I forget. I remember when my wife was there was all different kinds of ambulance companies running there, and they were all communicating with, I guess, FDNY.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of interesting. And there's still some volunteer stuff over there,
there's
too,
a
right?
couple volunteer systems. Central Park has a volunteer ambulance, and they're fairly busy.
I did see them running around when I was up on the Upper East Side.
Yeah, they staff two or three ambulances, depending on the day of the week and what's going on in the park. And
now they're just backup for paid, or
they're covering the park. They're actually on the Central Park precinct frequency, so they hear a medical call go out, they go with the precinct, and
Wow, they got to be running.
They only run BLS, so it's medics from whatever medic units in the area backing them up.
Okay. And then you got the whole Hot Zola ambulance.
Those guys are all volunteers, and they're amazing. We had Washington Heights has a big Hot Zola group. And they had their own paramedics as well. But a lot of times they didn't have a medic available or whatever, and they put the job into the 911 system, and we backed them up. And 99% of the time they'd be waiting at the door for us. Hey, we're ready to go. We're just coming downstairs. You want to set up in our ambulance? Here's the keys. Yeah, sure, no problem. I don't have to carry somebody.
Yeah, I've heard that they do a great job over there, and they really—I mean—they're all volunteers too. Yeah, so, and they'll stop and help anybody; they don't care.
Nope. They'll do it all.
Yeah. So, which is great. I mean, but there's still some volunteer firehouses I heard in New York too. There's two or three.
There's a couple more than that. I know there's Staten Island. Maybe there's two in Staten Island. There's one in Throgs Neck. I know a couple guys on that department. Ooh. And they have mini pumpers because the streets in Throgs Neck are so small.
It's great.
And I think there's a couple in Queens, maybe one in Brooklyn, but yeah.
It's amazing that they got their staff like that. Yeah. I mean, you can still get volunteers out, and I mean, I can't imagine what the call volume's got to be, but you know, New York's constantly running, right?
Yeah, I mean the trucks don't sit; they run.
So when you're paramedic, I mean, how much downtime would you have in a day? What were the shifts? 12 hours?
There were eights.
Eights, okay.
Not a lot of downtime.
I can imagine.
Christmas Day, sometimes. Easter Sunday, sometimes. Friday nights, never.
Yeah, you knew if you were working a Friday night, make sure you ate well. Make sure you had all your snacks with you because you're probably not stopping, right?
Yeah, I worked per diem for St. Clair's Hospital in Midtown for a while. And Clair's, when they were open, covered Times Square. And one of their medics units set 47th and 7th, right at the crossroads in Times Square.
Yep.
And, oh my God, did I have fun working that truck. It was busy, but it was all, legit silliness in Times Square.
Yeah. Well, the people watching alone in Times Square is worth its weight in gold. I mean, you're right there by the Marriott Marquis, right in that area, right?
Yep, yeah, right there.
Yeah.
And, you'd sit there on Saturday night, comes up like 3 o'clock in the morning, and Times Square's starting to wind down, and you're sitting there with a NYPD ESU, maybe with a mounted unit from NYPD, and you're all just kind of leaning on the front of the ambulance or on a patrol car, drinking coffee and watching the world go by. And some of the greatest conversations.
Yeah, well, and again, the city that never sleeps, right? Because 5 o'clock in the morning, there's still people wandering around doing their thing. Still, still bouncing around the city. You go anywhere else and cities are dead.
Oh, yeah.
But not New York.
Roll up the sidewalks in some cities.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Midnight comes, they start rolling them up, and that's it. But, yeah, you can get food. That is the beauty of New York, right? You can eat at any time of day or night. You can
eat anything
food.
You want.
Yeah, yeah.
You want sushi, go there. You want Indian, go there. You want Dominican, go up there. It's all over the place.
And it's open 24 hours a day.
Yep.
There's always one spot that's open.
There was a Spanish bakery on Lexington and 103rd Street. And they roll down the gates at like 10 o'clock at night, but there was a square in the gate and a doorbell. And you could go ring the doorbell and get pastries and coffee any time of day.
Because they're baking
all the
time anyhow.
All the time, yeah.
Yeah, so might as well make a few bucks, right? That's crazy. I have to look for that place now.
I don't know if it's still there, but I'm not in the city at 3 o'clock in the morning much anymore either.
I love a good bakery, though.
Yes, yes.
It's hard to find a good bakery. So you hang out with the Naked Cowboy in
Yeah. He was there strumming away.
Yeah, he's always there. That's his spot right where you.
Yep.
Because that's where everybody comes through. So.
Yeah, him and all the animals, the Sesame Street characters and the Big Birds and the Elmos and the Batmans and
I'm thankful that our one of our camera guys did not come as the Naked Cowboy, just came as a cowboy for Halloween. So.
Yeah, that would be a little distracting.
Yeah, it's distracting enough with the cowboy hat on, right? So. Don't worry, Brendan. We'll get a picture of you later so everybody knows what we're talking about.
Just paste it in right here.
Exactly. So get tired of that or, just the hours, the grind, what happens at that point?
I talked about the guy that I worked with that was a year and 9 days on the job longer than I was alive. And I looked at myself probably about after 4 years with him and said, I don't want to be him when I grow up. And I was in my early 30s, late 20s at that point. I don't want to be him when I grow up. He's a great guy. I just don't want to be on an ambulance at that age. So I started looking at other venues. I wanted to stay where I was working at a great hospital to work for, great system. So I started thinking, well, what can I do that's kind of in the same vein? Well, I'm a fireman. I'm a hazmat guy. We have a special operations team in EMS, and I was doing that, and I think I might want to move this direction. Maybe I'll start doing some emergency management stuff, see how I can work my way into something like that. And a supervisor's position opened up that ran that special ops team and was doing emergency management. And I applied for it, and I got to the final interview, and they gave it to somebody else. But I wasn't discouraged, and I kept going to school. I kept learning, kept doing different things. 2 years later, that guy moved on to another position. Out in Pennsylvania to run an EMS system, and the job opened up again, and I applied, and thankfully this time around I got it. And that was almost 11 years ago.
Okay. So the last 11 years you've been running and gunning with this now.
Yeah. So I moved into that special ops emergency management spot as an EMS supervisor. It was great because I supervised no one.
It's a great supervisor position, right?
Yeah.
Supervising no one.
And my wife said to me, this is the best job for you. You get to go to work and play with toys and then come home. Like, yeah, you're not wrong.
Probably better for the home life too, right? You're not working those overnights.
It was a Monday to Friday job. Yeah. No more overnights. No more weekends unless something bad happened.
Yeah.
No more holidays.
Yeah. Get held over, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't let you go.
Yeah. Oh, I know it's Christmas, but your relief didn't show up.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. So now definitely it's easier to plan your day, plan your obviously emergency happens, yeah. But you're not getting, you know, that daily, like, oh, man, I hope I don't get holdover tonight.
Yeah.
Especially knowing you're going into a holiday or something crazy.
It's 10:55 and you go off 11 o'clock and they're calling your unit.
There's nobody there, right? Yeah. Nobody coming in.
No. But so that was great. That was February 2014 I got that job.
Okay.
My wife was pregnant with my son. It was our first kid. Great. Home life. This is going to be perfect. He was born in August. October, I get a phone call. You need to go to the vice president's office.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. What did I do? I walk in, and he says, so this Ebola thing that we've been watching. I'm like, yeah. He goes, we're going to build a containment unit up at one of our hospitals, and I need you to go teach everybody how to use PPE. Oh, okay. That doesn't sound bad. I went home 3 months later.
Is that really?
It was... Yeah. Yeah, we took an ICU, turned it into a one-bed bioisolation unit, had a whole staff of volunteer nurses doing donning, doffing, worried about, you know, viral load on your PPE and all that fun stuff. And we were using glow germ. It's like a powder that glows in the dark under a blue light, or a black light rather. And we were watching them transfer it as they were doffing their PPE and they were getting dirty. Yeah. And I said to the guy running the unit, I'm like, look, I have all these EMTs and paramedics that do hazmat. This is their thing.
Yeah, bring them in.
Let's bring them in. So we brought 8 of our medics in there that were hazmat techs to do the doffing. And by day 2, no more transfer. So that was my life from like October to January. And then Ebola kind of slowed down and went away. And I went back to my regular job. And 2 years later, I had the opportunity to move into just doing emergency management as a manager out of the EMS department, full time into emergency management on the corporate level. And that's where I am now.
You hopped right out, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
How did 2020 treat you?
Ooh.
I know COVID had to be – I mean
– COVID was rough.
Especially in New York City.
Yeah. We were slammed. Early February, we received our first patient. We didn't know what it was. He came into one of our community hospitals in Westchester County. He was really, really sick, and we transferred him down to one of the large campuses in Manhattan. And it was probably about 2 or 3 days later we found out what it was. The Department of Health set up camp, and they didn't leave us for a couple weeks. It was an interesting time. But as that started to evolve, I was standing in our command center and standing next to the other manager from my department who was pregnant at the time. And somebody looked at the two of us and went, first off, the two of you should not be in the same place. Because if one of you gets sick, we don't want to lose both of you.
Yeah, because the isolation and all that other stuff that was going on at that time, right?
And they looked at her and went, you're pregnant. You should go home. Take your laptop. Don't come back.
Yeah. You're working remotely.
Yeah.
So were you stuck pretty much at the facility?
No. So I had the unique experience of running all of the tents that were set up outside of our ERs, all of those surge bases. And unfortunately, running all of the refrigerated trucks. I spent a number of nights sitting at my house going, wow, never thought I'd do that in my career.
Had to be a little bit of a morbid job too, right?
Yeah.
Thinking about it, you're like, oh.
And then something else would happen. And I go, never thought I'd do that in my career. And then on a Sunday night, I got a phone call from my VP who said, again, phone call from the VP, need you to go work for Joe tomorrow. Okay, Joe's our senior vice president. Sure, what am I doing? I don't know. He'll tell you when you get there.
Ooh.
Okay. That was when we opened the field hospital.
Oh, okay.
So that was 280 beds in created in a week.
And were you guys – I mean, I know we had those Mercy Hospital, those floating hospitals.
Yeah,
They were barely used.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was weird because – we had all these sick people, and they needed care, but we needed this ICU space for the sicker people. So it's where do you put the people? We ran out. I mean, we doubled our ICU capacity. We took operating rooms, put a wall down the middle, and made it 2 ICU rooms. We had cafeterias that were set up as field hospitals. We had patients everywhere. But we made it work. Yeah, and the Mercy, I mean, the Mercy was a great idea. It came in and said, we're only taking non-COVID patients. We don't have any of those.
What good is that?
We don't have any of those.
Yeah. Nobody had any of those at that time. I mean, they had to, I think Meadowlands, they had at the MetLife Stadium, they had set up as a field hospital.
Central Park, the Javits Center. Javits. The Pier in Brooklyn.
Yeah, they had a ton of them set up, and they were never really that full.
No.
I mean, even though there was thousands
and
thousands.
There were patients in them, but they were never full. You're right.
Yeah, there was never a real heavy capacity.
Yeah.
But I just remember it was a weird time because, I mean, we were going to fire calls and, you know, two guys in a fire truck. We were trying to, you know, keep guys separate. Again, can't have every volunteer firefighter go down with an exposure. So we're separating guys out, keeping guys separate and you know, masks. And then they were deconning the truck after every time we ran with this fogger. Which was probably, you know, worse for us than
breathing in all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and then we were running, we ran to a house and they're like, oh, I think they have COVID. Now we're going on air for COVID, you know, and then you got to decon everything. It's, you know, it was a crazy time. It really was. I mean, you know,
I had picked up a per diem job in 2019, the spring of 2019, right before COVID started, as a paramedic working at a hospital in Jersey, local to us. And that March, I picked the phone at the beginning of March. I called one of the bosses there and I went, hey, can you take me off the schedule the next couple of weeks? I think we're going to be busy. 3 months later, I went back working on the ambulance, and I didn't have that experience of COVID working on the ambulance during the height of it when they had all the national ambulance contract ambulances in and all that.
Yeah.
But I went back, and my first day back on the ambulance, my partner says to me, you have something to cover your hair? I'm like, no. I don't have anything. Why am I covering my hair? Oh, we were told we have to cover our hair. So-and-so is making surgical caps. She's got them in her bag, $5. Sure, no problem. I got a nice one with baseballs on it.
There you go.
Yeah. But it was, I had spoken to friends who were still working on the ambulance, both in the city and in New Jersey, throughout, and never really grasped how bad it was on the EMS side until I went back after that first wave, and it was still bad.
Yeah, it was bad. I know a couple guys that were, a couple guys in Patterson who are firefighters, and they run their EMS there, so they bounce on shifts, and, they were short-staffed. They had guys, exposed, and back then, the exposure took you out for 2 weeks minimum.
Oh yeah,
in the beginning, it was weird. It was a weird time, and trying to do anything up here, as far as like EMS, police, fire, that everybody was kind of just really an allergic, especially EMS. EMS was so overwhelmed.
Yeah,
and then we had, our EMS wasn't getting out. They had some older people that were not riding because
for good reason.
They really didn't know what, they didn't want to catch COVID because they're older and
you can't
blame them, right? They're volunteers. You don't want to lose your life for, volunteering, but I understand it. So, they were short staffed and that just put so much pressure on everything else. And, luckily they were able to get some contract ambulance services in here to help out. I mean, we never see. Up in my town, we would never see an ambulance from Patterson. We saw it a couple times.
It just
happened, right?
They're calling 911, and the police department's calling MyCom for the paramedics, and they're, well, I don't have an ambulance. Can you get me an ambulance, too? And it's like, yes, but it's going to take a couple minutes.
Yeah, and it's weird because the population in Bergen County is so heavy, and we're so close to New York City, you would think that we'd have some countywide EMS or – we do now.
We do now, yeah.
But it took some time to develop, and it's definitely something that, grew out of COVID. And it's funny, you talk about February 2020. I was in Disney. We have a house in North Carolina. We drive down to Disney. It's 8 hours. We went down for a couple of days to Disney. We were down there for February break for the kids. We get back to our house in North Carolina. We're going to drive home, and my youngest son is sick as a dog. Don't know what's wrong with him. He's sick as a dog. And, we get back home. They run the flu test. They do, they do strep. They do every test they can. They don't know what he's
nothing.
At. And he's out of school for like the next 4 or 5 days after that. And then beginning of March, COVID becomes, I said to my wife, I said, he probably had COVID.
Yeah.
We're down at Disney, people from all over the world down there, kids, what do kids do? They touch everything. I mean, he was a teenager, but they're still, they're not worried about, you know, washing their hands after touching a handrail or anything like that. So, but and that was probably, and people are like, you think so? I'm like, yeah, it was here in November of 2019.
Yeah.
You know, we just didn't know about it.
No, in that same vein, I teach as an instructor down in Anniston at the Center for Domestic Preparedness, one of FEMA's training sites. I teach in the hazmat programs down there. And I was there the week before Christmas, December 19. And I came home with like a cough and a sneeze, and it got bad. I actually called in sick. I never call in sick. Like 3 days after Christmas. And I stayed in bed, sick as a dog. No idea what I had. Called my doctor. He goes, it sounds like you got the flu. Drink a lot of fluids.
Gee, thanks.
Yeah, thanks. That helped a lot. World comes to a screaming halt in March. I don't go back down to Anniston to teach for probably a year and a half. I get down there the first time, and I'm teaching with a couple guys I taught with in December, and we're talking about our experiences. And like, oh, yeah, I came home sick that week.
So somebody had,
right?
Oh, yeah,
I came home sick that week. We had people from all over the nation in that class.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember where. I only remember the one girl who was an EMT that was in the class was from Alaska. And I only remember because it was December, and she was outside in a T-shirt. She's like, the weather here is great.
Yeah, because it's like 25 below in Alaska that time of year, right?
Yeah. But half the instructor staff went home sick. So we probably all had it.
Yeah. Yeah, and nobody knew. Right?
No.
Nobody knew
what
it was.
We didn't know what it was. I'd read something about it, heard something on the news.
Yeah, they weren't making a big deal about it, though, in late 2019.
Yeah.
Even early 2020, it just
January 20, the World Health Organization declared it a pandemic. Or, sorry, an epidemic. And then it went on to be a pandemic later, but...
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, March was a tough month.
Yeah, they closed the schools here. It just became, my kid came home from school. He's like, oh, you hear they're closing the schools tomorrow? I'm like, they're not closing the schools. And then all of a sudden.
Yeah, my son was in kindergarten. Well, like, my daughter was in daycare. What do we do with the kids?
Exactly. And you know what? Luckily, they were in kindergarten and daycare, because I know kids that are in certain age groups that are really struggling to catch back up because – learning at home for a year.
Oh, yeah. Did not help them.
Yeah.
Didn't do them any favors.
I mean, they were working. They were doing half days on a laptop. You know, half the time they weren't paying attention.
Yep.
No.
And my wife was trying to figure out what she was doing with her job and trying to work from home and trying to do this and trying to do that. And thankfully, we have a good family friend who's a teacher's aide, and she was out of work too. So she came to the house and did school with my kids.
Yeah. You're lucky you have somebody like that, right, to do a little, at least keep them moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we kind of muddled through a little bit. My wife was working remotely, and then we did two shifts here at the shop, just so that if we had an exposure, we didn't lose everybody at once.
Half your staff, yeah.
And we had police departments and EMS and fire dropping off vehicles to be serviced, and here we are, fogging the inside of them, closing the doors, letting them sit for 24 hours. And guys like, I just need something repaired. I'm like, listen. This is what we got to do. This is our procedure. I can't, and then we did have a couple of little exposures. A couple of guys' wives were nurses and stuff like that. So but I worked nights. It was great working nights because during the day I was home with the kids and, I'd come in and then I'd run home for dinner real quick. I was 5 minutes away, so I'd run home for dinner and then right back to the shop. And there was only, I think at one point, there was only five of us working at night because, by the time we kept on cutting the, guys were dropping like flies,
Yeah, I was working like 16, 18-hour days. My work-from-home days were Saturday and Sunday. And even then, I'd get a call at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and I'd be off to somewhere in New York City to do something for somebody.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
sometime in mid-April, my boss looked at me and went, when was your last day off? I'm like, I don't know, sometime in February. He goes, good, take off tomorrow.
Yeah, turn the phone off, right?
Okay.
You got to turn the – it's not going to work if you don't turn the phone off.
And then I went to work anyway.
Yeah.
And he yelled at me. The following week on the same day, I think it was a Thursday, take tomorrow off. And if you come to work this time, you're in trouble. Okay, boss.
Yeah. Everybody needs a break, though. I mean, it is tough to keep running that way.
Yeah, it was a weird day. I sat on my sofa. The kids were home. I'm like, what do I do with myself? I've been going for 2.5 months.
You just kind of sit there. You sit there. You ever sit there and just stare at a TV that's not on?
Yes.
I've done that.
Yes.
It's like, you're just sitting there and people are like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know, just thinking about it, everything else because I don't have that kind of free time.
Yeah, thinking, and the remote's way over there.
Exactly. So now you've been doing this. You get through COVID. Now you recently just picked up a new gig, right?
Yeah, I'm doing some event medical stuff. It's kind of sort of EMS, but not really EMS. There's no ambulance involved. I'm working the marathon on Sunday.
Okay.
So that's going to be fun.
You didn't get to work any of the Yankee games, huh?
No, no. I didn't get to work any of the Yankee games.
I mean, there weren't a lot of them at home.
But I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be fun to get back into EMS, sort of. I call it EMS adjacent.
EMS light.
EMS light. But, you know, I'll get to go to some sporting events, a couple concerts, work some, you know, events like the marathon. And
it's a supervisory role, right? So you're not.
It's a, they call it a leader role. So it's kind of supervisory, but not supervisory.
Kind of like a team leader?
Yeah, it's like right in between, which is perfect. Some responsibility, not too much responsibility. Yeah. Some patient contact, not too much patient contact.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. And they just do triage work, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty much triage work.
Triage and Band-Aids.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to use one of those in when I was up in Albany. My son had would get migraines. We were at a concert, and I'm like, oh, I didn't bring any of his medication. So, of course, we go downstairs to medical. I find out where medical is. We go downstairs, and the lady's like, I can give you aspirin. I'm like, that'll work.
Yeah.
We'll try it out. I mean, we'll see what happens.
Start the process.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but they were contract people. They were there just working.
Yeah.
You know, they had wheelchairs. They had people sitting down there. One lady fell down the stairs. They were waiting for an ambulance to pick her up. And
Yeah.
You know, they wheeled her in, and she's sitting on a little bed there and, you know, a little cot. And that's.
Yeah. Thankfully, a lot of stuff that happens at sporting events and concerts and stuff like that, people trip and fall, you know, but you need people there in case there's something more serious.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you see them walking around at all the events. Like you go to events, you see them, right? You go to hockey games, you go to concerts, you see them walking around. You never think about it, but they're all contract people. So, yeah. So that should be fun.
Yeah, some of them are folks like me that don't do EMS anymore and kind of want to still be in it, and some of them are doing it, you know, full time EMTs and paramedics, and they're doing it as a side gig.
They'll make a little money, a little extra money. Plus, you get to see some cool stuff, right?
Yes, absolutely.
As long as you're not called for.
Yeah. Unless it's busy.
And it's usually not. I mean, depending on the event, it's usually not too busy.
No, I mean, you go to some of these festivals, and I'm sure they're running like crazy, but
I can imagine.
Baseball games shouldn't be too bad.
Yeah, I can imagine what Woodstock would have been like if you would have had to be an EMT there.
That would have been entertaining.
Think back about even what was it, the 25-year or 20-year?
Yeah.
They said that was even kind of a little crazy.
Yeah, it was a little crazy, yeah.
There was no EMS back then, no EMTs going to events like that. It was self-medication.
Yes.
And there was a lot of it.
Which
a lot
is
of
why
choices.
It was entertaining.
A lot of choices for self-medication back then, too. So, so now you, we got to know you. I don't even know how long. I always say, oh, I've known you a couple of years. And people are like, oh, I've known you like 6 or 7 years. It's just time flies. You came to us.
We did our first vehicle in 2020.
Okay.
Towards the end of 2020, you guys did our first conversion, but I got to know you through Tenafly. Tenafly had done a Chiefs truck.
Yes. Yeah, it was a couple years before that.
Yeah, a couple years before that, and they loved it. And I had written a spec right before COVID at the hospital for a vehicle, and then COVID.
Killed everything.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we finally got back to that. And, we got our first vehicle. We got two vehicles from me in 2020 for emergency management. And then we started doing some security vehicles, just simple amber lights. And we've done a couple other things with you. And I just dropped a generator off to have a solar panel put on the roof of it to keep the batteries going.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because, you know, you guys, all of a sudden you guys came out as a real good customer. And then the one day Ryan calls me and goes, hey, a couple of vehicles here. Do you know anything about them? I'm like, no. Apparently you had the vendor just dropped them off.
Didn't tell us he was shipping them. They just showed up. Yeah, he calls me. Did you order these? I'm like, yeah, why?
Because well, they're here.
Oh.
Yeah, let me come check them out, make sure they're the right vehicles.
Yeah.
Or hey, send me. I remember the one time you're like, I'm kind of busy. Just send me pictures. They look okay. They're clean. Yeah, they're clean. There's no damage. You're good.
The day they dropped off a dump truck for facilities. Okay. Let me call a guy from facilities and find out.
Yeah, they're pretty funny because they just, you know, we're not used to just having things drop. You know, usually it's, you know.
Yeah,
I get a PO. We got to get this. We got to get that. You know, hospital systems run a little different.
There,
you know, just drop it off.
Or somebody wrote the PO
and never
sent it.
Yeah, which is more likely the case, right?
Yeah, because they did the PO when they bought the vehicle, and you know, two different vendors,
and it just sat somewhere.
Yeah,
on somebody's desk. Oh, yeah. Once the vehicle comes in, we'll get that over to them.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the vehicle gets shipped to us, and we're like,
"Hi,
are we expecting this vehicle?"
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you guys, you know. Hospital systems, they do tend to get some money, though, right? It's a little different than...
It's weird. It's, you know, some things are regular capital. Some things we can do grant funding. Health and Health and Human Services. Wow, I just lost my mind there for a minute. Health and Human Services from the federal government runs a preparedness grant program every year, and they make us do deliverables, you know, run this exercise, update this database, do this, do that. And we get grant money out of the deal. And some of that grant money is earmarked for some things, but some of that is for preparedness. And a lot of that preparedness comes down to now post-COVID, I need a shelter for this. I need a trailer for that. I need the vehicle to tow that. So we can do a lot with that grant money. And one of the things that we do is we have our emergency management vehicles. And
You're kind of set up so you could run completely off site if you had to.
Absolutely. We can run off site. We can run outside the site. We've had some incidents where we've had to set up outside the hospital for a little while just to figure out what's going on. And one of the projects you guys helped us with was a mobile command vehicle. And really the primary reason for that was so we could pull security camera feeds outside the hospital. So that's set up. It's on our hospital network. We've got a couple computers that can access the security camera feeds. And now I can pull up outside and pull up my cameras and not have to worry about trying to get into a security command center inside to pull camera feeds.
And maybe expose yourself to something, right?
Yep.
Keep as many people. I mean, you know, if you got a lockdown for exposure to something,
then you're good to go.
Why am I going inside?
Yeah, exactly. To do that? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So no, it makes sense. I mean, and it's getting bigger and bigger. I mean, now you're seeing a lot more mobile hospital type setups. Yep. They're doing mobile medical units. They're doing mobile surgical centers now. I mean, the stuff out there now is getting crazy.
Down in North Carolina, they have a whole mobile hospital system. It's like three or four tractor trailers. They can do emergency rooms, surgical centers, all sorts of stuff. It's amazing. I'm a little envious of their program, to be honest.
Well, I mean, nowadays you have to. I mean, what if you lose a hospital for whatever reason, right? Like they had those mudslides in Western North Carolina. They wiped out towns.
Yeah.
They got to go in and set up somewhere because you're going to need a hospital nearby. Who knows? The nearest hospital could be hours away.
And it was unexpected.
Right? Yeah, correct.
We knew a rainstorm was coming. The leftovers of Hurricane Helene, great. It's remnants of a hurricane. Whatever happens with remnants of a hurricane, well, it destroyed Western North Carolina.
Yeah. Wiped out towns.
Yeah.
And
wiped out our IV solution supply.
Oh, really?
Baxter Health.
Health is over there. That's right.
That's IV solutions. Everybody's now conserving and watching what they're doing and trying to figure out where our next shipment's coming from. The FDA just got on board with international shipping, so now we can get products from other countries. But for a little while there, it was like, this is an emergency. And other people were, well, it's just IV solutions. Yeah, it's IV solutions.
And how many IV solutions get used every day for everything in the medical service?
Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of liters of fluid every day.
Every day. And then that doesn't include the people that are doing it because they partook too much, right?
Yeah. I mean, and we're required to keep 96 hours of standard stock on hand of everything. Great. That's 4 days. If my shipment's not coming for 5 days, what am I doing on that fifth day?
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
Now you're begging, borrowing, and stealing from other places in the hopes that they have a little bit more supply than you do.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, do you guys have a pretty good network within the hospital network, like other hospitals?
So there are 55 hospitals in New York City. That's five major healthcare systems plus health and hospitals, which is the city health system. And there's a couple independents there, and we're all competitors. But when you talk about emergency management, where we're all competitors, on the emergency management level, we've got a group text. We're always talking. So we're those guys that are getting out ahead of it a little bit and saying, hey, I'm running low on X, Y, and Z. Do you guys have anything you can spare? I don't know. Let me ask my supply chain folks. And we talk to our supply chain folks. They talk to their supply chain folks. Our CEOs talk, and we see what we can help with.
Yeah, because, I mean, end of the day, it's about healthcare.
Exactly. It's about taking care of the people.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I know not only that, not only do they have healthcare in New York, they own a ton of buildings around – amazing how many buildings they own and how many apartment buildings they put up visiting doctors. And you know, my wife was in Sloan. We had to stay close to Sloan for 2 weeks. They had a whole housing facility that they sent us to.
Yeah,
and I was like, I never knew this existed. It's incredible.
Yeah,
it's all on the upper. Most of it's on the Upper East Side.
It's all over the place. It's not just the Upper East Side. It's the West Side. It's downtown. It's uptown. All over the place. And infrastructure in New York City is aging on a whole. So a lot of places are knocking down buildings and putting up new buildings. You know, they're putting up multi-stories. They're putting up green buildings, you know, green roofs, zero emissions, everything they can do to try to make it better than what was there before. But real estate's hard to come by.
Oh, in New York, there's only – you're on an island.
Yeah.
You know, people don't realize – some people don't realize it's an island. You're very limited in space.
And it's a giant rock. Forget about an island. It's a giant rock. So when you talk about digging down, there's blasting, there's this, there's that. So it's hard to put up these big buildings there, but they do it.
I know when I was in the city, right across from Sloan, there was a hospital. I mean, it was covered for – I mean – it looked like they were doing construction, and they're probably going to be doing it for 20 years, it looks like.
I mean,
it looks like they started probably just going to be massive projects, massive undertakings. So.
Yeah, it's amazing. They put up the scaffold one day around an old building, and then like 3 weeks later, the building's gone, and then 10 years later, there's a new building. they can dig them down so fast, but they take forever to go up.
Yeah, well, easy to come down, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, by us, they have the new Valley Hospital here in Jersey, so that finally opened, I want to say – earlier this year.
Yeah, they were talking about that for probably 10 to 20 years.
10 to 20 years, yeah. Then, we got, it all started with a parking issue.
Yeah. Yeah, they ran out. They wouldn't let them run the, they built a parking garage there. They had to go down.
They went underground because they wouldn't let them go up.
And they ran out of space and they wanted to go up more. And town said, no, sorry. And the hospital went, okay, we'll go to another town.
And that's how it all started. It all started with a parking issue, and then they realized they're growing out of this, they're growing out of that, they're growing out of this. So it was just like, okay. And I don't know, is that still part of the Valley Health? I mean, the building that's there?
I think the original hospital building, I think, is now same-day surgery and doctor's offices and all that stuff.
Like they did over in Hackensack did over in the old Pascack Valley.
Yeah, the old Pascack Valley. Yeah, similar.
Yeah, I went there. I had hand surgery there. I broke my hand. I had to go to Pascack Valley 100 years ago.
I broke my foot and I had to go there.
Maybe I passed you in the ER.
That was a great day. I walk in and they're like, you're injured. I'm like, yeah. How did it happen? I'm like, I was walking. I hurt myself. And they're like, do you feel safe at home? Yeah. Why? I live in a nice town. No. Do you feel safe in your home?
Well, they thought you got beat?
Yeah. Like, are you asking me if my wife beat me?
That's great. Yeah, you go to a doctor's office nowadays, and they ask you all these weird questions now that they're required to ask you, I'm like, oh, these are kind of odd, but.
Yeah, just come out and ask the question. Yeah. Are you a victim of domestic violence? No, I was walking, and I'm clumsy.
I know a lot of people, the foot injuries, like the people that stub their, and they break your toe, and then you're in an air cast for weeks and weeks and weeks.
I was in a giant gray boot. Thank God it was my left foot, so I could still get around.
You could still drive, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you don't realize it until you do something stupid. And you're like, oh man, I can't use that limb. That makes it a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
So, but that's it, huh? You're happy where you are now, and
I'm happy. I'm good. I work for a great place. We were able to do a lot of good for a lot of people. Things are good.
And now you're gonna work a marathon.
Now I'm gonna work the marathon on Sunday and remember why I left EMS probably. But I think I'll have fun.
You'll have a good time, I'm sure. Sure, but all right, I appreciate you coming in, Art. We look forward to having you in again because I'm sure you'll have some stories, especially post marathon.
I think I'll have a good one or two.
Gotta hear him. So thanks for your time. Appreciate it.